Sounds good.
Okay, so thank you very much for all coming, and we're looking at going back to basics, going back to anatomy. And I guess if you stick to the basics, you never have to go back to basics. And a lot of the time, I find with fitness professionals, they're always searching for more information, more knowledge, and sometimes their current knowledge isn't as deep as it should be before they start to spread their knowledge. So there's many types of knowledge you can acquire, and tonight's going to be addressed to very specific knowledge to your profession. And you can go very deep into all of the different topics of tonight, and it may not necessarily be related to what you do in the trenches. So it's always important to identify what's important in the trenches to know, and what is extra to know while you're in the trenches, and what is not even related to the trenches, but it's good to know. So I always believe that having a trainer, you should always have a good general knowledge of everything, really, because particularly with the types of people that you're training, I seek to acquire a good general knowledge of everything. When it comes to your trade and your profession, of which you're going to be doing, if you choose for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, I'm actually clicked over 35 years this year as a trainer, then this is my expertise, this is my thing, and this is your thing. So, I have an expectation, as I'm sure you have an expectations upon yourself and your own standards, that you have a good deep understanding of what you're doing in the trenches. And I also understand you never really understand, because there's always more layers of understanding, like an onion. Just when you think you understand, then you address it again and you see new things that you didn't see before in the same place. I always use the example, if you read the same book multiple times, which I'm assuming that you would, if you came across a great book like How to Win Friends and Influence People, or Rich Dad Poor Dad, or The Richest Man in Babylon, or Think and Grow Rich, some of these iconic books, and every time you read them, you see or learn different things, and you think, well, I didn't actually really learn that the first time I read it, and that was because you weren't ready for it. You weren't at that layer of understanding yet. I always remember listening to a great a philosopher of life and happiness, a guy called, oh, geez, it just popped out of my head. And I remember listening to some of his audios. I will come back to you by the end of the night. And the first time I listened to it, I made no, oh, Wayne Dyer, there it comes, he's popped back in. Wayne Dyer's passed away now, but he's a very much a spiritual teacher. And the first time I listened to him, this particular tape, I thought, wow, this is really heavy and deep, and I have no understanding what he's talking about. But when I listened to it again 6 years later, all light bulbs went off, because now I had a better understanding, because maybe the student was ready. So that's why when you address anatomy, it's always important to, yes, you don't learn it once, you're never going to understand it the first time. You're never really going to understand it. But the more you go through it, the more you revise it, the more you become curious with it, the more you become a student of it, the better you're going to have an understanding of it than the people around you, which will help you to explain certain things that will be helpful for them to understand why they're doing what they're doing. So I've been teaching anatomy for, since Max started, I suppose, which is now going on 29 years. And every time I teach it, I get a better understanding. I don't actually learn new content many times, which I can. You can certainly learn more content, but you start to understand the content that you already know, because you're mature, because you have more experience. And I guess one of the challenges of doing the Max program as a student is you go through with the headspace and the mindset of a student. So therefore, a lot of the content of the information you're learning, you have no connection to it. You got no experience with it. I'm sure if you went out and became a personal trainer for 5 years, you came back and did the program again, all of a sudden there'll be actually a Christmas tree of light bulbs would go off, which didn't go off the first time, because now you have under your hat massive amounts of experience, because experience helps you see through the fog of knowledge to see it for what it really is. So it's not like, the biggest challenge I find is people do a course, they get the content, they pass the test, and off they go, and they start jumping around in the trenches like a pig in the mud, and they forget all the content, and they forget all the knowledge, and they just sort of experimenting with practical things. Some work, some don't, but overall, if you keep trying, something will work, but so many times you cause a fair bit of damage along the way. So what I'm going to ask you to do is be a student of life, be a student of anatomy or anything that's important to you for the rest of your life. And that's why we give you a life education, because you can access all the audios, all the videos, all the resources as many times as you possibly can. You can go through it for the rest of your life. And yeah, it's always good to have it in the background where it just slowly marinates into your brain and little light bulbs will eventually go off. If you just listen to something enough, it will start to it will start to clear up and you start to see things you didn't see before. But as you step forward, there's more things you don't see. That's where you got to keep going. So yes, I understand with Louise, you get a little bit frustrated sometimes with, hey, I'm not getting this. Well, hey, welcome to learning. You don't get it the first time, but you will eventually get it. But then by the time you got that, there's all this other stuff you haven't gotten, and you still stay in that frustrated place. So rather than be frustrated, be curious. Turn into curiosity, and knowing that if you keep persevering, you will eventually see the light. You will start to see it for what it is, and then you'll be able to explain it. So yes, you always think, well, if I learn this, and even if I use some accelerated learning techniques, yeah, but the accelerated learning techniques don't always necessarily help you in the understanding of it. It just helps you in the remembering of it. So yes, you've got to remember it, and then the next level is you've got to start to understand it. But understanding seems to come when you start to do it, because there's an old saying says, if I hear it, I forget it. If I see it, I remember it. And if I do it, I understand it. So in learning, you try to use all your senses to be able to learn. Your visual, which is you see it, you hear it, means the audio. That's why we give you audios. And then practical, get out there and start practicing. And always be curious in your training. Whenever you're training somebody, always ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why are we doing that? Just ask yourself why, and how does that work? And if you always think like a student as if you know nothing, then you're going to start to acquire far more knowledge than the people around you. So tonight, let's have a look at some content and maybe some of you would have gone through this session. I think it's session five or five, I think. And if someone says, oh yeah, they hear something and they say, yeah, I know that. Yeah, you would have heard that. When someone says, you say something and they say, yeah, I know that. Well, many times they didn't know that. You saying it or them hearing it just reminded of what they knew, which of what they forgot. So yes, it's not about knowing when it comes up that reminds you that you know it. Because when you see things or you hear things or you smell things, you never actually lose that memory. It's always in there. It's just something has brought it back up again. And the idea is for you to be able to retrieve that yourself, bring it to the surface when you want it. And obviously understanding it is going to be far more, will be very helpful in that. So let's have a look at the makeup of a body. I guess that this can be cross compared to a house. You know, the house is made of bits and pieces, or a car is made of bits and pieces. So when I always learn, I always try to use analogies or examples that people understand. Like most people understand the operations of a house. Most people understand the operations, the fundamentals of a car, because that's something they're exposed to, the general public is exposed to on a daily basis. So when you explain this, not just to yourself or to clients, but the general population or a five-year-old, try to use examples which they would understand. The other day I was training a new client, little Juliet. She's only about 11 years of age, but she's a super athlete. She's already a international level athlete in her sport. And as I was teaching her some exercise and training and teaching her some martial arts, I was using analogies that she could understand. So I was using cheerleading analogies that made her help her understand martial art principles. When I train Dan, who's an international level cricketer, when I'm training him, I use cricketing analogies to explain fighting methods, because that he really understands. So always try to connect to the people that you're teaching and look at the things they do understand and try to cross-relate it to the topic that you're talking about, whether it be anatomy or fitness training or interval training or Zumba or weight training, whatever it might be. So try to find common ground and connection. And that's the same with you. When you're learning, try to say, okay, this is how can I relate to this to something that I really understand, whatever it might be, one of your sports or one of your activities or hobbies or something. For example, if you look at the house, a house is made up of bricks and mortar, they say. Well, yeah, they're like the building blocks of the body. house has an electrical system. It has a electrical board, and then it has all the wiring and the light. So that can be the nervous system in the body. And you try to say, okay, well, the electrical board or the mainframe board is the central nervous system. All the wiring is the peripheral nerves. The main wiring that comes out of the power box is the vertebral column, not the vertebral column, the central nervous system, the spinal cord, and then the lights are all the muscles that have been activated. So yeah, you try to explain it in those ways for yourself, and that way you come up with nice little stories. Because I think most things in life are related. They follow very, very similar principles. If the house also has a plumbing system, so water goes around, that's the plumbing system, and that's like the cardiovascular system where blood, that's all the plumbing or the vessels. And some houses, some of the more fancy houses, has an automatic vacuuming system where they have these little vents around them that automatically vacuums your house. Well, that might be the lymphatic system that gets rid of waste products and stuff like that. The house also has in the part of the plumbing system you have the toilet. Well, that's like the digestive system to get rid of stuff out of the house and waste products. So I'm just trying to throw out things which you might be very familiar with, and then you try to cross-relate it into learning, say, the systems and the building blocks of the body. So let's move down and have a look at what makes up the body as I we go from the top there. Or the smallest building block of the body is called cells, the individual cells. And I guess that is like the bricks that make up a house. They're the building blocks that make the body. So at the cellular level, the body is all made up of cells. Now, if you get a big bunch of these cells together, then they make tissue, and there's different types of tissue in the body. You have the tissues of the skeletal muscle, and you have the tissues of the organs, and you have the tissues that make up the bone. So that's some cells, and the whole bunch of cells form tissues of the body. Now, you also have what we call organs. Because tissues make up the organs. The digestive system is made up of organs. The endocrine system is made up of organs, whether it be the heart or the liver or the kidney. That's all made up of tissue. Muscle is made up of muscular tissue. And then you have, obviously, you put all these organs together and you connect them all, and they can make different systems in the body. Like in a house, you have the systems of the house, the electrical system, the lighting system, you have the plumbing system, the vacuuming, the ventilation system. So you have all these systems that make up all the different, and they all work together in the house. And obviously that's all controlled many times by a central nervous system or remote control. In the body, we have, obviously, you'll be very familiar with the muscular system and the skeletal system, but they all work together to get the body functioning as a house. All the systems in the house work together to keep the house at the right temperature, so with the right water pressure, with the right lighting, with the right current, and you have these protective mechanisms in there as well, in the fuse box, as the body has in the muscles in the form of the receptors. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say is, I could look at some certain analogies to be helpful, but I'm sure you can come up with some real gangbuster ones that you're going to understand even better for yourself. So let's move down to the different systems of the body. Obviously, the integumentary system is basically what is this comprised of? Obviously, the skin, which is the biggest organ in the body. Obviously, it covers the entire exterior aspect of your body. This may includes also the hair, nails, the sense receptors. So if you touch your skin, I know someone's you touching you. The sweat glands, obviously, the cooling off of the body, and oil gland. So that's basically the content of the system. And from a fitness professional point of view, you want to have a good superficial knowledge of this, but not necessarily a deep knowledge of this, because the professionals who would probably will need a deeper understanding of this would ideally would be people like beauty therapists of a more of a from a professional point of view. And obviously at the elite level, you'd be looking at dermatologists, cosmetic surgeons, Those types of people are going to have a very deep understanding of this system. As a trainer, you just need to know a superficial understanding and how it relates in when it comes to exercise. So, what is the function of this system? Obviously, the skin is the outer laying of the body, which is there for obviously protection. It also helps in regulating temperature. When you get hot, blood goes to the surface of the skin. You get a little bit red, and that starts to get heat off the body. You start to sweat, and the evaporation of the sweat cools off the body. So obviously, this all transpires through the skin. It also is involved in the synthesis of chemicals, and the skin is a sense organ, means it has a level of sensitivity to it, where you can feel, the sun rays of the sun, or heat. You can feel set the sense of heat. You can feel the sense of cold. You can. So it's certainly, obviously, an important system. Or there's no system more important than the other, obviously, but it's something which you want to have a good superficial knowledge of it, so you can get an understanding. So let's move on to the skeletal system. Now, this is going to be probably a more important system for a fitness professional to understand, because this is a system that gets a fair bit of applied stress on it, and can also get lots of injuries. And it can also suffer from certain diseases such as arthritis and osteoarthritis and osteoporosis and all those injuries, capsulitis and all osteitis. So we're not going to go too much into the depth of all the different injuries. That's another session. But obviously, a lot of the conditions that we're exposed to with a client who may be suffering from osteoporosis, or I've got a client now who has quite significant osteoarthritis in the hip joint, and we're trying to settle it down and seeing if he's going to have a hip replacement. So obviously I have to take that in consideration when I'm training him, because it doesn't recover so well, and he's of a man of maturity. So what makes up this system is obviously all the bones of the body, and then you have the joints. And obviously, as you know, joint is where two bones are joined together. So you have all the joints, such as the glenohumeral joint, or the hip joint, or the which is the head of the femur, and the acetabulum, or the elbow joint. And obviously it consists of the cartilage, which is the extremities of bone, to reduce the friction between the two adjoining bones that form the joint. You have the smooth cartilage, and obviously we need to protect that, because if once that wears out, you're going to start to get lots of joint challenges like chondromalacia, where the cartilage starts to fragment, particularly under the patella. So again, I'm not going to go into detail, I'm just using little examples of why this system is so important to understand. So what is it? What does it do? Well, number one, obviously, as you know, it supports the body. It basically gives you your infrastructure, gives you your basic frame to work with. And we have to make sure that we respect that. It protects vital organs, so it forms as a form of protection. For example, the ribs protect all the vital organs. The cranium protects the brain, and even to an extent, the pelvis protects the reproductive organs that sit in the pelvic area. So certainly has a strong role in protection. Obviously, because the joints, it allows movement, because bones move across another bone, and by pulling of the muscle, you get movement. And the bones are also the storage of vital minerals. So the bone storage of your calcium and your phosphorus. So the bones isn't just there as a structure, it actually is live tissue, and it turns itself over, and it's very has a very important role in the body, not just to maintain a structure for you. And this is where your red blood cells are produced, in the red marrow, in the spongy bone, in the spongy part of the bone. So it's a production of red blood cells. Bones have blood supply. As I said, they're active tissue, and they produce red blood cells, which obviously is very vital to the human life. And it's the stores of chemical energy. So if you look at what it does, obviously they're all very vital roles. A lot of people just think bones are just these inanimate things that just hold us apart. No, it's a live organism. And obviously the bone, the skeletal system, works very closely with the muscular system. It's the muscular system that pulls on the bones that provide movement and create movement for the body. The bones provide an attachment point for the muscles to work off. So there's and that's the obvious bone that most people know is the skeletal bone, also referred to as striated, not just a skeletal muscle. I think I said skeletal bone there, but skeletal muscle, also known as striated muscle, because when you look at under a microscope, it has a very striated appearance due to the arrangement of the actin and myosin filaments and how they slide across each other gives that striated look about it. So skeletal muscle is obviously there to really to pull bone and create movement, and give us good posture. So it's very important in posture. So it's made up of skeletal muscle, smooth muscle, which is the muscle of the organs and the blood vessels. Smooth muscle is very elastic in nature, very rubbery in nature. Smooth muscle is self-contracting, means it's involuntary, where skeletal muscle is voluntary. It means I actually has to consciously contract the muscle to move the joint. There's a conscious thought process for me to contract the muscle or relax the muscle, where smooth muscle, it contracts automatically by itself, because obviously you want the heart, for example, or the organs to continually contracting while you're asleep or when you're not thinking about it. So your digestive system is always digesting food in a muscular contraction type way. While you are sitting here tonight, your body is digesting food. Your organs are operating by themselves without you having to remember, because with most people's memories, we'll probably forget and the bodies would all shut down. But we can forget about our skeletal muscles. We just sit on the couch and just relax them. But the smooth muscles of the organs and the blood vessels, it's always pumping blood through the vessels. It's always contracting foodstuffs through the digestive system, and all the organs are always operating, whether it be cleansing out of the blood, or whether it be releasing hormones, whatever it might be, that's always working. And cardiac muscle is obviously the muscle that makes up the muscle of the heart. The heart also has a it's self-contracting, means it's involuntary. Thank goodness it contracts by itself. Otherwise, we'd probably forget, and our heart just keeps beating in a rhythmical nature. And then obviously, what else makes up a part of the muscular system is your tendons, and the tendons are the tissues that actually connect the skeletal muscle to the bone. So they're what we call connective tissue. They don't have as a good blood supply, so you've got to make sure you protect them, because if you wear them out, they don't regenerate very well. And once they inflame, things such as tendonitis, or they wear out, like tendinopathy, we can have some major painful challenges there. So yes, the muscular system is really important to get a deeper understanding of how that all functions. And even in the smooth muscle, you want to understand that, because a lot of the metabolic diseases, such as diabetes and coronary heart disease and certain cancers, we're going to be exposed to that in the fitness profession, particularly the way the health is heading in society, which is not going in the right direction. And obviously the cardiac muscle, because one of the biggest killer in the world today is coronary heart disease. So what does the muscular system do? I've already pretty well covered most of this. I guess it's the muscular system. It's there for movement of bones, obviously movement of foodstuffs, or movement of blood. It's there for maintenance of posture. So the muscular system is really important for posture, because our posture can have an effect, a direct and an indirect effect on the accumulations of repetitive stresses that go across joints. It can lead to joint challenges and challenges in the skeletal system. So everything is connected, and you always take one system always in consideration with all the others, because one can affect the other. And obviously muscles, because muscles is like the engine of the car, where that actually breaks down energy and releases heat, like your car. If you start up your car, the engine will start to get hot, because the combustion of the petrol in the engine produces energy, but a byproduct of the production of energy will be the release of heat. So muscles is the engine, and there's going to be obviously a production of energy that has a byproduct of heat, and obviously that can take a role in the other systems. Once you get hot, then the body needs to cool itself. So the integumentary system will come into play to open up your sweat glands, to release fluid in the form of sweat. So the sweat will evaporate to counteract the heat production from the muscular system. So one helps counteract the other and keep the body into a nice homeostatic state, or a nice balanced state. So the muscular system. Next one is the nervous system. And again, these aren't in any particular order of importance because they're all important, as you know. So the nervous system, this is the central command, or on Star Trek, the bridge where all the orders are made, and the orders go out, and they go out to the different engine rooms to create demands or commands so the body will function. So I guess in the house, the central nervous system is like the main electrical board, and then you have which is the brain. The spinal cord is the main bunch of wires that go out of the main central electrical box, and then it spreads throughout the house where all the wires to the lights, and that's like be all the nerves. And then you have all the lights, and that would be where would be the muscles or the organs that nerve is actually stimulating. So I guess the nervous system is made up of your brain, where all decisions are basically made. When that decision is made, then obviously that message goes down to the spinal cord, and that's sort of the main corridor, and it goes down to the part of the central of the spinal cord that the message needs to go to, whether it be the upper body or the lower arm. Then it goes out via the peripheral nerves, through the peripheral nervous system, and then it starts to sends the message to the muscles, the organ, whatever that might be. You also have sense organs. The two ones that we're more, familiar with in the fitness profession is the Golgi tendon organ, which is the sensory organ that sits in the muscular tendinous junction between the muscles and the tendon. And the Golgi tendon organ is responsible for sensing tension and force generation in a muscle. So if the muscle generates too much force or too much tension that it could injure itself, then the Golgi tendon organ is activated, and then that sends a message back to the brain to stop the muscular contraction so it doesn't damage the muscle. I guess that's similar to a fuse box. You know, sometimes my fuse goes here when we put too many electrical appliances on, and the fuse will go. And I guess that's the Golgi tendon organ saying there's too much electricity, too much current, danger, danger, let's flick the switch so now you can't hurt yourself. And that would be a great analogy, the Golgi tendon organ. The other sensory organ, which we'll be more familiar with, is the muscle spindle. The muscle spindle sits parallel in the muscle fibers in the muscle belly, and its main function is to monitor the rate of lengthening of a muscle so you don't overstretch it. So if a muscle starts to stretch rapidly, then it will stimulate the Golgi tendon organ that will tell the central nervous system to counteract that muscle, to contract it, to stop it from lengthening, to protect it. So the body always seems to do the opposite. So the nervous system is made up of those vital components, and all obviously the nervous system connects to the muscular system that activates the muscular system that connects to the skeletal system that moves the skeletal system to create movement. So they all work within each other, and we'll make that subtle connection as we go through. So the purpose of the nervous system, again, I know this is all just fundamental stuff, but it's all vital. You need to never forget your alphabet. The purpose of it is obviously is the main form of communication. The nervous system communicates with all the different cells of the body. It's a way that you can control. You can control the body's functions and integration of all the different systems and integration of all the different cells and the organs in the body. And obviously the central nervous system recognizes sensory stimuli. So when you actually, the feeling of touch, that's all the central nervous system, or pain, that's the central nervous system. So it's very sensitive to stimulus, so the body can protect or respond or react to that stimulus. So let's moving down to our next system, which is the cardiovascular system, another very important system for the fitness professional to understand. Obviously, in these different systems, for example, the nervous system, people who would want more understanding of the nervous system would be the chiropractors. They very much work on the nervous system and the alignment of the spine. their belief is to get the nervous system and the spine all in alignment, and the body will heal itself. So there's certainly a very strong point for that, because the body is a self-healing organism. You just have to create the right environment. Obviously, people who would go more deeper into the muscular system would probably be, again, would be chiropractors and physiotherapists. And physiotherapists will work very much with the nervous system as well in understanding that. And if you even go back to where we were with the skeletal system, that's where you'd have people who, chiropractors, physiotherapists, orthopedic surgeons would need a very strong understanding, a deeper understanding of these systems. And they're all allied health professionals that we'll work with, and you can get a great education from them if you ask them some very wise questions. Then a lot of the knowledge I've acquired over my 35 years is my actual working with orthopedic surgeons, neurosurgeons, heart surgeons, physiotherapists, chiropractors, because when I work with them, I'm always a student. I'm always asking them their view on certain things. Now, not to say that I agree with all their views, but I certainly respect them, and I take the bits which I find that make sense, that bed into my philosophy, and then I get a great education along the way. So the cardiovascular system, I guess we talked about in the house, it's like the, I guess it's the plumbing system. It consists of the, in my house here, we have a pump down there, because we're on tank water, so that would be my heart. That's where it all pumps all the blood. So the heart is like the pump. It's a very, very strong muscle, and it has all the blood vessels that go throughout the body, which comprise of your arteries that transport blood from the heart out to the working tissues of the body, and you have arteries that return the blood via the arteries from the tissues back to the heart. So obviously pumping heart blood out, you're going to be pumping out oxygenated blood full of oxygen. And on the way back will be deoxygenated blood, because the oxygen has been used in the tissue to generate energy, and therefore the blood will come back with a bit more carbon dioxide in it. We'll talk more in detail of that in another session. And obviously that's all in the blood vessels is blood. In the blood, that's where you carry your oxygen, your gases such as oxygen, carbon dioxide, nutrients, your macronutrients, carbohydrate, fats, proteins, alcohol, if obviously having that. It also transports your hormones through the endocrine system. The endocrine system works in conjunction with the cardiovascular system, because that's how it transports the hormones around the body, as well as transportation of enzymes and waste products, things such as lactic acid. So yeah, it's like the it's like the canals of Venice. This is where it's a significant transportation system through the body, whether you want to transport nutrients, hormones, macronutrients, vitamins, minerals, as well as enzymes and drugs as well, of course. Let me not forget. So what is the purpose of it? As I just mentioned, it's the most significant transportation. It's the most significant transportation system in the body, but also it's the regulation of temperature, as I mentioned before. You know, the blood can actually carry heat to the surface of the body through the peripheral blood vessels. And the more blood gets to the surface of the body, the more the body can dissipate heat off the body to cool itself down. And also immunity. So it's the immune system that fight against disease through the white blood cells. Also clotting, such as platelets, to help in the clotting of blood to stop any form of hemorrhaging or internal damage. So yeah, it has a very strong role in that as well. You know, I've I'll use a classic example. At the moment, I don't know if anyone noticed, I've got a funny looking rash on my neck at the moment, and it's not a rash. It's actually I'm treating a couple of skin cancers, which I treat once a year, and nothing dangerous. But I just stay on top of them before they get on top of me, and I treat them with a topical cream called Aldara. And what you basically do is you rub the cream on the skin, which is the integratory system, which is the skin, and the Adara is an amazing thing. It actually activates your immune system, so the immune system actually spends all its effort and time diverting all its military, you could say, to that spot of the body. And in that spot of the body is you have disrupted cells or cancerous cells, nothing you can see from the surface, but they're underneath, and then all the blood and the white blood cells and all the fighter cancer fighting demons in the body gets concentrated in that spot, and a battlefield arrives, and that's where you get that redness and the rash and the inflammation, and then eventually over time you win the battle, and my rash turns into a scab, and that peels off, and then my skin is completely brand new. And I always remember when I went to my skin specialist, dermatologist, and he gave me this treatment for my face many years ago, because I had all these little skin cancers. And he says, "What?" It was a six week treatment, but he said, "Well, once you go through it, you actually look about 10 years younger, because it just gets rid of all the dead cells and the cancerous cells." And I guess that's a classic example of how the body can all work together: the immune system, the lymphatic system, the cardiovascular system, the integumentary system. They all work together to achieve one common goal. And so when I'm actually doing it, it's actually can be a bit painful. But when I understand what's going on, so you don't freak out. So this is supposed to happen. This is why is it all red and swelling? Well, that's the battle, and the white blood cells are kicking the cancerous cells' backside at the moment, which is cool. If you don't understand it, you sort of freak out a bit, because it's not a pretty sight. And the same with anything when it comes to training or fighting off a disease. If you understand it, then you don't get scared by it. So let's move on to the respiratory system. Again, the respiratory system works very closely with the cardiovascular system, as you would know. The respiratory system consists of the nose, and there's a picture up there, the nose, the pharynx, which is the back of the mouth, the larynx, where you get down to whether you go down the it separates from the esophagus to the trachea. The trachea, which is like the windpipe, that breaks out to your two bronchioles, that goes out to the left and the right lung. And then in the bronchioles, in the lungs, you have your alveoli, which is the cellular level where the transfer of gas is exchanged from the external environment to the internal environment. So this is your exposure to the outside world is through the mouth, either through eating food digestion, getting it into the digestive system, or breathing it in through the nose and mouth, which is you bring in the gases. So this is the only real doors in the body. You only got two doors, front doors, I suppose. These are the front doors. The back door obviously is the rectum, where you get rid of stuff, you get stuff out the back door. But we'll talk more about that later. But this is the respiratory system, and its purpose is obviously the supply of gases, particularly oxygen, to the body, because obviously, as we know, oxygen is required in the body to produce energy, as a fire requires oxygen to produce energy, to burn energy. So we get that oxygen in via our breathing, and obviously in that process we can also in that process have filtration of irritants through the nose, through the hairs in the nose and the lungs. So it's like a little bit of a sieve, I suppose. And also it's used to get rid of gases as well, such as carbon dioxide, which is a byproduct of production of energy. So it's a way to get gases in, the right gases in, the right gases out. And it's also works in conjunction with your to get to maintain a regulation of your acid base, and we'll talk more about that, because the body is obviously always trying to maintain a good acid base level in the body. But we'll talk more about that very soon when we get to more of the lymphatic system. So the respiratory system transports the oxygen from the outside world to the lungs, and then from the goes from the lungs into the cardiovascular system, and then it's transported down to the cells of the body, to the muscular system, and that oxygen is used to produce energy in the muscular system, which then contracts and pulls on the skeletal system to create movement. So as you can see, they're all connected, and we'll keep connecting these dots as we move through. Everything is connected, and everything is dependent upon each other. Now we have the endocrine system. The endocrine system is made up of the glands and the hormones in the body. So I guess the endocrine system is it's like a messenger. It's like a chemical messenger, like the nervous system. So the body can be activated by many ways. It can be activated by the nervous system, or it can be chemically be activated by the endocrine system. So a gland is really a little storage tank, a little organ, a little storage organ, that where it stores hormones. And hormones are basically messengers that are released from the glands, from the endocrine system, and those hormones are transported by the cardiovascular system down to the appropriate tissues in the body. And what the hormones do is they send a message to start a physiological reaction. For example, if I start running, then I'll get all my gland to release the action hormones, things such as catecholamines and testosterone and human growth hormone. These are all action hormones, adrenaline, noradrenaline, and they'll go down to the cells of the body to start to create a cellular physiological reaction to produce energy, where we mean to start to break down your fats and break down your carbohydrates and break down protein to a minor level. And then the process of that breakdown, you need oxygen. So therefore, your respiratory system will suck in the oxygen that was transported via the cardiovascular system, goes down to the muscular system, and then that muscular system is activated by the nervous system, and it's also activated in the cellular level by the endocrine system to produce the energy to create energy for movement. So I guess it's like a trigger. The endocrine system, the triggers in the body to either create energy or store energy. You know, things such as insulin is a storer. So when there's stress in the cardiovascular system, in the blood vessels, because you have too high blood sugar levels and your blood glucose levels are high, then there's a stress response. So the body goes, well, we can't have all these glucose molecules floating around the blood vessels because they'll cause an internal damage to the inner lining of the blood vessels because they're very big molecules, as you know. Therefore, we need to store them in the cells. So how do we do that? We need to create a physiological response. So insulin will be released from the pancreas and is transported via the cardiovascular system. It goes down to the cells. It creates a physiological reaction where it opens up the cells. And then in that process, then your glucose levels are then transported into the cells and converted and stored as glycogen. And obviously that's the endocrine system playing its role into help open up those cells to store the glucose. On the reverse end, if you start exercising, hormones such as catecholamines will be released into the blood system, will open up the cells to release the glucose as well as the fats, or free fatty acids, into the blood, so it gets transported to the muscles, where it will start to be broken down, which requires oxygen, which is transported by the cardiovascular system that gets it from the respiratory system. And the byproduct of that, you have carbon dioxide, and the body needs to get rid of that, so we transport that by the cardiovascular system through its blood vessels or the arteries back to the lungs, which is the respiratory system, where you exhale that out. So, you know, it's quite an amazing. A lot of people try to study these all separate, but what's important is to try to integrate them all and see how they all work with each other, and that's going to help you actually understand it. If you just look at in a very isolated way, you cannot see the bigger picture. You can't see the forest through the trees. Sometimes it's easier to understand the tree if you see the forest. So, yeah, I guess as I mentioned, what does it do? It secretes hormones from the glands. It maintains a good blood hormone balance. Obviously, after exercise, your body has to rebalance its hormones. If you're sitting on a couch eating too much food, then the body will try to rebalance its hormones and try to rebalance the concentration in the blood. And it also, as I said, stimulates physiological reactions. The lymphatic system, obviously this is not so important, I guess, for us, but it's always good to have a good little general knowledge. Massage therapists will probably have a bit of understanding of this in this area. But what is the lymphatic system? Lymphatic system basically carries, it's like a drainage system, I suppose. It carries fluids and nutrients and waste material, and it carries it between tissues and between blood. You have nodes, and the most concentrated nodes that you have in the body would tend to be in the neck, the armpits, and around the groin, and they're all connected by vessels. I guess a couple nodes of interest would be the thymus, which is the responsibility of that is to generate T lymphocytes, which is basically the production of a white blood cell to fight off disease. It's all part of the immune system. And the spleen is also a part of the lymphatic system. And I guess the purpose of the spleen is to filter blood. It recycles red blood cells, and it's the storage for platelets. Platelets are forms of protein that help in hemorrhaging to stop internal bleeding. And also it stores white blood cells. And these fight off bacteria, certain bacteria that causes diseases or medical challenges such as pneumonia or meningitis. So yeah, obviously a very, very important system. It's a form of transportation and very significantly involved in the immune system to keep us healthy. So that's the lymphatic system. Let's moving forward, we go down to the digestive system. And yes, this is fairly important because obviously we fuel the body through food. So it's important to not to you know to be a surgeon in this area, but understand how it basically operates and what's made up and how, because we eat our food and this is what happens to it. Obviously, you have the primary organs that make up the digestive system. This is nothing new. You have your mouth, your pharynx, which we talked about, your esophagus, where the food goes down into this big acid bag called the stomach, and when it goes into the small and large intestine, that's when certain nutrients and macronutrients and micronutrients will start to be absorbed into the blood. So this is where food, carbohydrate, fat, protein, maybe alcohol, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, they get absorbed from the digestive system and they absorb into the cardiovascular system, of which, say, for example, if you're absorbing energy, such as carbohydrate and fat, gets absorbed into the cardiovascular system, which is the blood vessels and where it's either stored in the cells of the body, whether it be the fat cells or the glycogen cells, or it is used in the muscles to produce energy. That is stimulated by the endocrine system, that is activated by the nervous system, that requires oxygen, which activates the respiratory system to bring oxygen into the body. So we connect all those dots as I've already shared in the past. And obviously, once you get through that, then there'll be waste products that the body does not need. And some of that waste products will go out, which is the waste products of the food, as well as waste products in the body, where the body will start to get rid of dead red blood cells. It will start to basically, that's why all poo is brown, because that's the dead red blood cells that the body's getting rid of, and that's obviously popped out the rectum at the back door and by the anal canal. And obviously you have a part of that system in the help of digestion, absorption and usage and storage and disposal. You have obviously the teeth breaking down the food, the salivary glands, the tongue, the movement of food. You have things such as the gallbladder, which is the storage, it's a storage for bile, which is a fluid consisting of fluid, fat, and cholesterol. And bile helps in the breakdown of fat and food in the intestine, so it's certainly part of the digestive system. You have the liver, which basically is responsible for detoxifying different chemicals and helps in metabolizing of drugs. And also helps in making of proteins that form for blood clotting. What else we got there? We got the pancreas, as we've already talked about, which releases the hormones such as insulin, and this is more involved into helping it convert food into different fuels for the cells, and it also involved in digestion and regulation of blood sugar or your blood glucose levels. And then you have your appendix, which is involved in the immune function. So the digestive system is really how we get our energy and our vitamins and our minerals and our macronutrients into the body so we can fuel the engine for smooth, healthy operation. What does it do? Well, obviously, it's mechanical and chemical digestion. Mechanical means because you've got all the smooth muscle, which we've already talked about in the skeletal system, or the digestive, the small and the intestines and the stomach, and they're all made up of smooth muscle, which is self-contracting. They're involuntary, so that those contraction helps move food through the system, through the digestive system, and aided by the chemical digestion of all the acids in the stomach to help break it all down to help it move through the system. Obviously, in that system is you absorb all the macro and micronutrients. From the food through the small and large intestine. So that absorbs it into the cardiovascular system to transport it to the muscular system. And obviously then defecation means then you any waste products is popped out the back door. So that's the digestive system and how it basically operates and how it's linked to the rest of the systems in the body. Now the urinary system, I won't go too much into this, but obviously it's made up of your kidneys, which the kidneys are basically, the purpose of kidneys is to filter your blood to produce urine. So that's where the blood is filtered, and obviously to produce urine. And obviously that goes through the ureter into the urinary bladders, and then the urethra, which is out the end of the penis, I suppose. And that's where you do your little piddles. Yes. So that's the urinary system. And the function of the urinary system is obviously the cleansing of blood of waste, and also aiding in electrolyte balance in the body, water balance in fluid, water balance in the body to make sure you don't, how can you say, fluid retention, and the acid balance in the body as well. So that's the urinary system, which is really helps get rid of all the byproducts of all the other systems, all the byproducts of the cardiovascular system, which is through the kidneys. And obviously, all these together all work together to help the body function in a healthy way. And it's obviously very important to understand some of the more significant challenges when it comes to metabolic diseases. Obviously, you have obviously your soft tissue injuries and conditions such as arthritis and osteoporosis and tendonitis and capsulitis and bursitis. And you have all those plantar fasciitis and all the different conditions, sarcopenia and osteopenia of the tissues. But most of them don't kill you. I mean, most of those don't kill you. But the systems of the cardiovascular system and the respiratory system, yes, they can kill you. Because obviously now you're dealing with even the digestive system. We have some significant challenges. Obviously bowel cancer, you know, the biggest cancer in men. Breast cancer, which is the biggest cancer for females. Then you have congestive heart failure or heart attacks, coronary heart disease in the cardiovascular system. Diabetes, which is obviously you got a challenge with the endocrine system and the cardiovascular system. And that leads to obviously the breakdown of the cardiovascular system in the tissues of the body in terms of the blood vessels from diabetes, even the organs from diabetes and organ breakdown. Gallstones is related to the digestive system. Hypertension is obviously related to the cardiovascular system. And all of this is obviously some of the symptoms of this has been overweight, obesity. And then you've got things such as stroke, which affects the nervous system. So these are obviously some of these significant diseases which are can be a lot, basically life threatening, and certainly will affect your quality of life. And that's why you have to make sure all the systems are healthy. But if you tend to work one, for example, you do some exercise, then that works the muscular system, it works the respiratory system, it works the nervous system, it works the endocrine system, it can release all the hormones, it works the digestive system. So all the systems work when you use the body in a controlled way. But if you start, yeah, I'd say if you don't use it, you lose it, and it will probably end up starting to rust out. So it's better to wear out than rust out, as the old saying goes. At least you're going to keep your systems flowing and keep it in a not healthy state. It's quite funny, you know. So you see certain people will say things such as, you know, I've got a thyroid problem, that's why I'm overweight, or I have this condition, that's why I'm overweight. And I even have a counter argument to that. Well, what happened first? Did you get overweight, which stuffed up your thyroid, or did you have a thyroid problem that put you overweight? And my guess many times is that you got overweight that stuffed up your thyroid due to all the added stresses placed in the endocrine system, because you were overweight, carrying too much substrate through the blood system, because you took too much into the digestive system. They increased the storage system, they put the weight on the joints, and now you've got arthritis, and then that's put stress on the cardiovascular system, now you've got a high blood pressure. And it's funny, I was talking to a client just the other day who's 30 kilos overweight, and he's telling me all the things he has to do to rehabilitate his injury. And I said, how about we just deal with the obvious? If you got rid of 30 kilos, then that joint's not going to be as much under stress, and neither is your heart, neither is your cardiovascular system, neither is your respiratory system, neither is going to be your endocrine system, neither is your skeletal system, neither is your muscular system. And you're going to find that thing in your digestive system is going to be functioning far better. And so how about we just lose the 30 kilos and stop looking for short-term band-aids and look at just changing your overall physiology, and then you're not going to have that challenge. Because if you train one well, it tends to interrelate with all the rest. And obviously, if you look at our profession as fitness professionals, the main areas, the main systems that we wanted to get more familiar with is obviously definitely the skeletal system. Get a good understanding of the skeletal system, because all your clients are going to have injuries. They're going to have arthritis. They're going to have capsulitis. They're going to have tendinopathy. They're going to have it. So understand the skeletal system. Understand the muscular system. This is the bread and butter of what we do. Understand the nervous system, because that drives everything. Understand the cardiovascular system. Understand the respiratory system, and understand the hormonal system. Maybe not to as level as the other ones, but they're the main systems that I tend to focus on. And then just have for just general knowledge, general curiosity. You know, be familiar with all the other systems and how they play, and be open to learning. But those 2, 4, 6 main systems there, they're probably the main ones that we need to understand from a functional activity point of view, and not to the level we have to be an orthopedic surgeon or a neurosurgeon or a heart surgeon or an endocrinologist or anything like that, but to a level that we know what we're doing to someone's body when we give them a strength training exercise. We know what we're doing when we're raising their heart rate. We know what we're doing to the muscles when we're stretching someone, and we know what we're doing to the sensory organs, whether it be the muscle spindle when we're stretching them. We know what's happening at that level, so we can stop injuring them and take the hope out of an outcome and start to plan the outcomes, understanding the application of all the systems and their role they play in exercise to make someone healthy, fit and strong.